This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
It's hour four of the G-Bag Nation here live at Premier Grilling in Frisco, El Dorado in the Toll. Come by, get a Tolo back window decal. We have other fan trinkets and gifts we could offer you and amazing deals on the Kamado Geo.
And say bye to Mike.
Yes.
Who we will never see again after today.
2 hours of broadcasting with the G-Bag Nation remaining, and then he'll be with the KNC Masterpiece starting on Monday, 10 to 2.
What if it would be awesome if I joined Arnie and just called him a liar?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go do, like, I think some local show outside of Buffalo, but you could do that.
Okay.
I think you and Arnie would do a great show.
Yeah.
Coming up in the final hour of the broadcast, we're going to ask for your favorite memories of Mikey B and the G-Bag Nation. It's gone 6.5 years, and there are some, pretty funny and memorable moments to take in. So we'll take a stroll down memory lane with you if you'd like to text in, coming up a little bit later on in the show. I noticed Mike has been looking at the Autoflex Leasing fan text. Mm. How are your Valentine's goodbyes going over there, buddy?
Okay.
214 said, let's stop the D talk. There's a lot of references to people who have the anteater situation going on. We got some of those.
So
mostly they're just reacting to the previous segment.
Yeah. They would prefer less references to that.
Some.
Okay.
Some had a great time. Most had a great time.
All right.
I think.
And some were probably thinking, man, I thought we got rid of that kind of talk in this time slot.
Yeah.
You know, repetitive references to
over my dead foreskin.
Okay, we are now 2 hours into Mikey B's run in the G-Bag Nation being over, just 2 hours away, and we look forward to continuing to celebrate. We do have other stuff to celebrate, though, including Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame inductees for 2020, Baylor women's coach Kim Mulkey. She's in, so congratulations. The Class of 2020 Hall of Fame finalists. Oh, I'm sorry. That was pretty
Gavin. Well, as Garrett, as Garrett would say, she's been a really good coach in that league for a really long time.
She has. And I thought she was in already. She should be. Kobe, though, is the headliner. Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, as well as Tamika Catchings.
Duncanville.
Yeah, 10-time WNBA All-Star. So a couple of local tie-ins here. 5-time Division II Coach of the Year, Barbara Stevens. 4-time NCAA Head Coach of the Year, Eddie Sutton. And former Rockets coach, Rudy Tomjanovich, who won 2 NBA titles. Never underestimate the heart of a champion.
Yeah.
And, you know, those unexpected titles coming for that Rockets team that had struggled to get Hakeem Olajuwon healthy. And then Jordan retires, and he's healthy. It's like, hey, we can actually do this with Otis Thorpe and Kenny the Jet Smith and Vernon Maxwell. Some fun teams back in the day. Mario Elie.
I know this is about Houston Rockets. Do you think the Jordan-led Bulls would have won 8 in a row if he wouldn't have retired?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. They were.
If a bookie didn't catch up to him first and take his knees.
Yeah, I guess there is something to be said about how teams lose motivation after 3 in a row, right?
Yeah.
And it happened to Golden State, and it happened to Jordan twice, where he's like, okay, I've had enough. You know, it's hard to remain hungry. So who knows?
Yeah.
But they were the best. It wasn't even close the first three, and then the second three was a little bit closer, but they were still asserting their dominance.
It was like for I know David Robinson ended up winning later, but it was like for David Robinson, because this was the time of the big man. If you're a younger person, it was rare for like that Jordan time for like, but you had Olajuwon, Ewing, Robinson, Barkley wasn't a big guy, but I mean, you had all these guys. It's like, you can finally win because you had Bird and Magic who'd won them all. And I know you had the 2-year Piston run, and then Jordan comes along and you're just like, I don't know if anybody's ever going to win another championship for a long time. And Olajuwon was the one guy.
Yeah.
And he got both of them.
It was a thing of beauty, too. I mean, the way that he played, especially those couple of years, I know left a permanent impression on a lot of basketball people that maybe that's the greatest center we'd seen, at least the greatest games of center played when it came to his defensive domination, ability to patrol the paint, rebound, and then not only dominate the game from a scoring perspective from the post, but also I always felt like he was a really underrated passer and creator.
And then what a, you know, for Kobe to.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It was
It's going to be one of the most emotional Hall of Fame ceremonies you'll ever see, considering the timing on that. And I expect a huge dose of emotion coming up Sunday evening as well with the All-Star game, which takes us to our next story here. We're heading into Luka Doncic's All-Star weekend, getting set for being in action tonight, the Rising Stars Challenge, and then the game itself on Sunday night. He's speaking with reporters. He's busy. And I just hope that the ankle is good and we're not putting anything extra at risk here with that whole thing going on, because I want to see him push it and play tons of minutes and just throw alley-oops to people. You know, I think I want this to be a preview of what it might be like. You know, obviously you're not going to have an all-star cast, but what might happen, what Luka might play like if he was on a team with a bunch of dudes who could actually finish at a high level.
I'm with you. I wonder how much he's going to get the ball, because he is playing with LeBron and Harden to start the game. And so I wonder if he's going to just be kind of jogging to the wing three-point area, or if he's actually going to get to what you're talking about, actually handle the ball some.
Well, you know, there's guys at the All-Star game where it's their show. They're the biggest star on the team, and the guys kind of look up to him. And I don't think Luka's there yet.
No.
You know? So it can be disappointing sometimes or depressing when your guy's in and, like, the fans really aren't cheering for him. Fans are looking for dunks and explosive plays. So I hope the players, and he might be too young to get this kind of respect or status or opportunity. Maybe it's going to go to somebody else who the players have more relationships with. But my hope is that the veterans and the dunkers and the high flyers look at Luka as, man, we can throw it to him and then go run and look for space to create something and have it be an alley-oop fest. But that's how I would see Luka taking over the game, as a passer and a facilitator for other people's high fly-ins.
I hope we get to see something like that. I will say this. This was an interesting stat I came across, that he has shot 73.8% in the restricted area. It's giving, like, the all-star starters kind of their numbers at the all-star break. That is the best among non-bigs with at least 200 restricted area attempts in the NBA. So if you're not like Rudy Gobert, guys that just hang around the basket and dunk it pretty much, and that's your offensive game, he is the best at the NBA at finishing around the basket.
Well, you know, that's his height and his ability to use either hand. And then, you know, he had one the other night where he was coming in on the right side and did a big spin and fully outreached with his left to get to the other side of the rim. And he threw it up off the glass so soft, right? To have that amount of speed and then changing in direction and be able to still calm everything down and center the basketball off the middle. It made it look so easy, but that was a really difficult play.
Yeah, the footwork was awesome there. And then the one that made the highlight of ESPN for the shot of the night was when he got his arm grabbed, his left arm grabbed, loses the ball and regains it and kind of flips it up and it goes in for an and one situation. I just didn't realize when they gave these stats on all these starting players, I didn't realize that he is the best non-big at finishing around the basket in the NBA.
Impressive stat. Yeah. Okay.
Well, he has great shot selection from there, doesn't he?
Yes.
Like if it's not an ability to finish, it's getting kicked. And if he does have a chance, then he'll finish it.
Yeah.
Just got to work on the step-back threes.
He got a wide enough body to keep the guy far enough away, and then he's high enough, tall enough, that when he just pretty much gets on his tiptoes and reaches up, the rim's kind of helping him be protected. So I think he's going to get a lot of high percentage looks there throughout his career. There's no reason that's going to slow down at all. There is a calm before the storm going on right here with the Cowboys. The best headlines are just kind of like that they're rumored to be looking to make a splash in the draft. I see this Jerry Jones thing, and I'm like, man, it sounds like a great idea to me, though. Like, I don't know how much substance there is to this report, but if you Google Cowboys draft right now, that's one of the top stories. And how likely is it that they could make a splash? I don't feel like this is a splash-hungry front office anymore, like maybe they were 10 years ago. I do think, though, it is a roster that needs top-end players. And while I like the idea of hitting on a second rounder or a third rounder, we've got one third rounder over the last 10 years and two second rounders
that have hit.
Yeah, they've really been like, yeah, we got them, you know. So I'm open to that. If you can go from 17 and get closer to 11 or 12 and there's a player that gives you a legitimately bigger chance, not just being a starter. you know, but a difference-making player. I guess what I'm saying is I would like to see them make a splash, or I wouldn't be too disappointed if they do.
You want to pick one and pick two and move up and pick one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas because you want to take picks 2 through 7 and get another one.
Yeah. What would 2 and 3 get? I mean, honestly, pick the second pick and third pick, would that get me into the first round?
No. Okay. I can pull up the chart, but no.
Would it get you, like, in the 33 to 36 range?
I'll pull up a trade chart, but while I do that.
I mean, I'm just saying to your point, maybe you take the second and third round pick.
Yeah.
And get it a little bit higher. But I know my thing's not going to come true. I want 3 first-round picks, and I want to, and I would say get rid of. Look, the reason they have value is you're going to get first-round picks. I'd like to take Tyron Smith and Amari Cooper and have 3 first-round picks.
Yeah,
this
turn around a rebuild. You make something like that work. And if you can get players that good.
And somebody said, I'm glad you're leaving, Mike, the show because you're a Dakota hater. And I'm like, look, I think he's the 8th best quarterback in the NFL. We did the segment the other day where I rated all the quarterbacks. I think he's the 8th best in the NFL today as it stands going into the 2020 season. And I'm like, look, give him his money. But if we give him his money, I would then like to try to build, like, if Amari Cooper's not the perfect fit and Tyron Smith keeps getting hurt and his back is going out on him. I don't know, Cowboy fans, if you know this or not. His back is deteriorating and maybe faster than we think. And I would love to get a team maybe a little bit more desperate and then have our pick plus 2 other more first-round picks in this draft.
Your second and third looks like it actually, by the math, gets you up to pick 34, give or take.
Okay.
So right there, the very top of the second round.
But you know what I'm kind of talking about there, Jeff? With this pick at 17 and the way that guys talk about it, it's like, are you going to love a player at 17? So a trade up or a trade down for pure value sake would probably be the thing that a lot of teams in this spot would be looking to do, right?
Yeah, and I think that I think it's very possible the Cowboys would do that. I know Fish went over the numbers for it, what was that, yesterday, where it was like they very rarely in recent years have moved either direction. But this might shape up to be a really good year for it, unless they do get really wild and say, hey, we think that there's an offensive tackle here that's awesome. It's time to get willy-nilly and pick one and trade Tyron and do this and all these different things, which I don't think that'll happen. But I think there will be an opportunity if they, for instance, I saw on DallasCowboys.com this morning, they did like the ultimate mock draft roundup where they listed out who was being picked by the Cowboys by like 20 different people, and it was all the same names. Like all of the same 3 secondary guys.
Delpit, McKinney,
Henderson, and Fulton, the LSU corner. It was like all the same guys that at 17 you'd go, eh, I get it. Mm. Whereas at 24 you'd be like, cool, that's a good pick.
Makes more sense.
And then
there,
maybe you can add a little something in the second round or even the third round. And depending on how it plays out in the first 16 picks, which always has to be the caveat, I could totally see either direction. Where something's happening where Derek Brown out of Auburn somehow is on his way down the board, or Jeff Okuda, the Ohio State corner, is sliding down the board, and you're sitting there at 17 like, guys, if we go up 5 spots, we can get a guy that we didn't even think would make it out of the top 10. What do you think? Or you get to 17, you go, guys, we like 4 different guys here, and if we slide back a little bit, we'll get one of them. And we'll add something. I could totally see him going either way.
Yeah, so that's something to look forward to as that draft approaches in late April. And, you know, I do like Mike's idea. I don't want to be dismissive of it because, check it out, if you're going for it, use your picks to trade for veterans that you know can help you.
For sure.
If you can't win it, then trade those players for picks because it's all about getting the most possible amount of good players under the cap, right? And if you have extra picks, then it vastly increases the probability of it. And then, you know, in those years, it's great that you've moved off those veterans. That's going to make your draft pick even better. There's a very clear asset management formula to optimize your chances of winning the Super Bowl. You just have to be willing to ride the roller coaster. You know, you have to be willing to say, okay, for these couple of years, we might win 2 or 3 games, but boy, when we come out of this thing, we're going to be hell to stop.
It's one of the insults that people use when you start messing around with trading a bunch of players. Like, this isn't Madden. Maybe an NFL team does need to go full Madden. It's almost like an MLB thing where Mike's talking about, hey, I could totally see the Rangers wanting to deal their starters at the trade deadline. where you like flip around and acquire guys, and then if the season isn't going the way that you thought it might, well, let's flip them again to somebody who might win the Super Bowl.
The only reason to not do it is because you believe every game on TV has to be played to win. Like, this is a really important part of our business strategy, is that the fans know we're doing our best to win every single game. Or you just have a gentleman's agreement with all of your owners that, hey, nobody's going to take that super awesome way to win a Super Bowl, because that would be sort of, I don't know, disingenuous or unhonorable or whatever. But, man, it's so clear that moving off players to get picks and then build this army of young players while you're under the cap and then use your remaining cap space to fill in all of the gaps would set you up to win the championship. But are you in it for the championship, or are you in it for compelling TV ratings for 16 Sundays a year? That's the hard question the NFL has to look themselves in the mirror on. And whenever this topic comes up, I think about Mark Cuban. Now, 4 or 5 years ago, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. There's no doubt this NFL pig is massive, right? And winning the championship is deprioritized in so many ways. I just don't know if it can get slaughtered.
Okay.
That's my only question.
I don't think it can.
University of Houston is going to be the host of the XFL's championship game. If you're a big XFL fan, April 26th at the University of Houston, home of the Houston Cougars. It's been finalized.
The Cougs.
So congrats there to the XFL. It appears they actually are going to make it to the end of their season. Little shot at the AFL there for you.
They have enough money. That's what I heard, that Johnny Manziel's all upset. Like, I'm not playing for another league that's going to fold, and it's probably like, probably because that league ended up not wanting you.
Yeah, and Johnny, nobody cares about you anymore, okay?
Yeah.
I tried to keep it going for quite some time. We're done with you. We're over you.
Better luck next time.
Remember when it was hashtag comeback season?
Yeah.
Comeback never really happened, did it?
Best case scenario, like I said, Baker Mayfield becomes great, and then he can get back in a Snickers commercial as, like, the person who's all messed up because they don't have a Snickers yet, and then he turns into Baker Mayfield after eating Snickers.
You just gotta leave my Baker alone.
Thanks to our friends here at Premier Grilling in Frisco, El Dorado, and The Toll. We have some more Rangers talk coming up here for you, and then Jeff's Unnamed segment's coming up at 5:40. Check it out, just an hour and 41 minutes to go in Mike Bassick's G-Bag Nation career. Here on The Fan. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. We're live at Premier Grilling in Frisco, El Dorado, and The Toll. Baseball news. It appears there was at least one member of that 2017 Astros team that said, no, thank you. I'm not rolling like that, guys. You guys are a bunch of damn cheaters.
Ooh.
Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident and it's not your fault, call Frankel and Frankel 214-333-3333 or go online to frankelfirm.com.
Mike Fires.
No. No, I would imagine that the pitchers probably took a pretty hard pass on that kind of thing.
Okay.
Even when playing in the National League parks or National League teams, or I don't even know how that would come into play. But called up in 2017 by Houston was Tony Kemp. Immediately, he was asked by teammates, hey, you want to be a part of Operation Codebreaker? He says his answer at the time was a firm no, and he did not feel further pressure to take part. I wondered how difficult it would be to say no. I can't imagine myself in my early 20s possibly having the backbone to say no, but I would hope that I might, depending on how I felt. You know, but by that point, you would have been a very successful amateur and then minor league baseball player your entire life, and I could imagine arriving and being like, no, I want to prove this to myself. Now, if I'd shown up and tried to prove it to myself for 2 years and been up and down and, like, I'm about to get demoted again, then 100% I guarantee I'm code breaking.
Okay?
But if I'm a new guy coming up, I might be thinking, I want to see if I can prove this to myself. Because if I'm successful code breaking, and it could end up, you know, being a major psychological thing. And, you know, I don't want to have to try to worry if I can really hack it. I want to know right now if I can really hack it. But, man, you can plan a contender with this.
You know, it's tough is when you're playing select baseball, your coaches are trying to steal signs or see what the pitcher's throwing to try to give you signs, and same thing's done in high school and college. And so if you got to the major leagues and somebody's like, I think we can tell you what's coming if you want to know, I'd say, yeah, I want to know.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't think of the repercussions of it.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't think in 2017, if they're like, look, we got a TV set up here and we'll let you know what's coming when you come up to bat, I'd be like, sounds great to me.
Yeah.
It's really tough to hit and it makes it a lot easier. So I just think that because you're trying to steal signs from whatever age, let's just say 12 and up, because you just start seeing more off-speed pitches thrown at that point, that I would just think that most people would say as a rookie, shoot, yeah, I'll take the advantage of knowing what's coming.
I mean, you start playing really well and, you know, all kinds of things are waiting for you. I think that's the really difficult part of this for me. When I try to have sympathy for the players, it's like, how many players would actually said, no, we at least have one right here. He said, once I got there in September, the system was already in place, and I just tried to keep my head down and play hard and not really concern myself with it. A.J. Hinch and GM Jeff Luhnow were fired last month on the same day Rob Manfred suspended them over the sign stealing, Alex Cora and all that. Kemp said, though, he appreciates the apologies by Astros players, which he considered sincere. And he says, you definitely feel for these guys. You think these guys are going to be sympathetic figures? I'm not going to say that things were going on over there that were necessarily right. Those were wrong. He was acquired by the A's from the Cubs last month. I think that they're feeling remorse now. You see those guys and how they feel and they're acting, and you can definitely tell that there was some wrongdoing there. Kemp said he does plan to speak with his new teammates individually about it rather than make a statement in front of the group. Say, if I was more involved, then I think a statement would be the right thing to do, but we're all grown men, and I think you have questions, you come up and ask me, and I'll be straightforward with you. I think that if teammates have questions and want to come up to me, I'll be more than welcome to answer those questions.
Man, yeah. My favorite part of that is that he said that those apologies seemed like real.
Yeah.
One of them did.
Yeah, Carlos Correa.
There was one apology.
I heard Springer. He was all right.
Okay, I didn't
when I was
hear
watching
Springer.
MLB Network that day. Verlander, I can see Verlander, like his apology going, all right. Now, Verlander never used it to his advantage, except obviously the team scored runs for him, but he wasn't using it. He's just saying, man, I wish now looking back, I wish I would have said something to the guys as a veteran guy and said, hey, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Would it be an equal advantage for you if you could know what the hitter was sitting on and throw the opposite on every pitch?
Yes.
That would be like you would go out there and have a 1.5 ERA in the bigs?
I don't know if I would be that good, but if I knew, let's just say this, if I knew the guy was just sitting change up away.
Yeah.
And I could throw fastball in, and I didn't throw hard. But if he's sitting 77 away, and I could throw it 86 in and hit my spot, he's not going to hit the ball. He might break his bat, like getting the bat barely on the ball. And then if he's just sitting 86 inside and I can just sit there and throw change ups away, I'm going to be a really successful pitcher.
How much of the game is that? How much of pitching and hitting is that?
A lot, because I'm trying to mess up his timing. And he's also looking at what I do. So he's like, okay, I got a 2-1 count. What does Bassick like to do? Bassick likes throwing either fastball away or changeup away in a lot of these situations. So I'm going to be looking away. I might not know if he's going to throw the ball 86 or 78, but I know that the ball is going to most likely be in this location. If I trick him and I throw the ball inside, then they're going to – all of a sudden, now they're going to second-guess themselves the next time. And all it takes is doing that a few times to try to get the guys off balance, and that's when you have the advantage as a pitcher throughout the lineup. Because I remember facing the Dodgers in 2002, and Dave Roberts is a good friend of mine. We'd come up in the minor leagues a little bit together, and he said, man, you screwed us up. You did, like, opposite of everything I told the guys you were going to do. And I was like,
I knew that you knew.
Yeah. And so it's just
that's
like
a good compliment.
It's just like, I was trying to get you guys off of my changeups and fastballs away. So in times where you thought there's no way he's throwing inside, I actually threw inside, which then the guys would come back after their first at-bats and be like, well, what do we do now? And then I can now go to what I feel comfortable doing because I've now confused them on what I'm trying to do. And all they're trying to do is get their timing and try to get – most guys will just sit fastball. It's very rare. Like that – to me, the BS now
sitting slider
of sitting slider on a dude throwing 102 miles an hour. The way I was sitting slider. Well, if he throws a fastball, you're going to look like a moron. So, I know like
he swings after it already hit the glove.
And to see him not have any type of there's just no way because he would have looked different. Even if he hits a home run. I'm not saying you can't hit a home run if a dude hangs a slider. It wasn't a good slider.
But he would have been shocked.
You would have seen a little bit different approach if you're doing a normal. Like, he's throwing 102. I can't just sit slider on a dude throwing 102.
All right, it is the G-Bag Nation here. We're live at Premier Grilling in Frisco. Kamado Joe sale is going on for Valentine's Day. Unbelievable prices on these Kamado Joes, by the way. Let's stay with baseball here. You mentioned T.R. Sullivan's piece a little bit earlier. He did five predictions for the season, and I think you got through three of them.
Oh,
there's
okay.
A couple of others that I'd love your thoughts on. I think number two was that young pitchers will create excitement, which is what he said. You know, we're talking about the veterans, and obviously it's all about Kluber. But he throws out the names Joe Patterson, Colby Allard, Brock Burke, Taylor Hearn, Jonathan Hernandez, right-hander Kyle Cody, the Rangers minor league pitcher of the year in 17. He's healthy after missing 2 years because of Tommy John.
All right.
I guess he's been impressive in instructional league play. And then right-hander Jason Barr, who had a 106 whip in 12 starts at AA Frisco last season while striking out 9.6 per nine. So a collection there of young names. Mike, you've seen quite a few of these guys pitch either very briefly in the big leagues or up there in Frisco.
I think the great thing for the most part is now that you have five veteran starters who are healthy going into spring training and did not have major arm problems for the last 2 years, is that you're not going to have to force guys to pitch in the major leagues when they're not ready and then – question, why in the world did you trade for that guy? Or why is that guy considered a prospect in your organization? And so I think when these guys do come up, I think they'll be ready. And that's a big part of having a successful farm system, too, is you don't force these guys at the highest level when they're not ready for it, because it's going to embarrass not only that player, but it should embarrass you as a front office to be hyping a person up as a franchise piece, and then we see him pitch or we see him play, and we're like, that dude stinks. And it's just because they're forcing him way quicker than they need to be forced upon us in the major leagues.
Yeah, I guess that's a new trend in baseball, right? To get him up and let him adapt, and then...
And you know what happened and I'll give John Daniels this excuse. Early on in his tenure as a general manager, they kind of forced Elvis Andrus up, and he handled it well, and they forced Neftali Feliz up, and he won Rookie of the Year as a closer. And it's like, these guys are ready.
Yeah.
Don't tell me Profar and Mike Olt aren't ready. Did you not Neftali Feliz and Elvis Andrus when I was getting told the same things?
If you and got so, the stuff, you move them up, and iron sharpens iron.
Right, and so when he saw early success with pushing people, which a lot of people said, that's too quick to do it, he's like, well, I did it, and it worked, and so why wouldn't it work again?
Okay, one other quick thing, and it's on pitching as well with T.R. Sullivan. Apparently they're talking about or working on a Mike Minor deal. They don't want to let him go into this final year, and we've been talking about the possibility of trading him, but it's possible the Rangers like his value so much they might be trying to add years right now. Mike, would you be trying to do that?
Yes, because I do think he has time left in the major leagues after this year is over. I don't know what his value is if he were to become a free agent right now, but let's just say he was a free agent after last year and the season that he had. I'm just going to guess 3 for $60 would be his market if he was a free agent after last season. That's just a guess. So I'm thinking right now, if you want to offer him 3 for $60 and he says no, then I'd say, okay, I offered you what I think you would be on the marketplace. But if you're saying, hey, we want to get a deal done, hey, how about 2 for $30 million? I don't think that you're offering him what would be fair to him if he was on the market.
Great opportunity for the players. Secure your family in a situation like that. Mike Minor thought maybe a couple of years ago he was not going to get a chance to be a starter, but the Rangers gave him that chance. He made the most of it, and now he could be walking out of there with over $50 million in the bank. Okay, we're live at Premier Grilling in Frisco. Jeff, where are you going with your unnamed segment?
I got bad news for this Cowboys offseason. It's next.
Oh, no.
What?
No.
Yep, okay. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Lucius, and thanks to Premier Grilling here for having us up. We have another hour and 15 minutes in Mike Bassick's G-Bag Nation career. This will be his final show with us. Join the KNC Masterpiece on Monday.
What emotion was that?
Laughing and crying at the same time.
Okay.
In fact, the other day, Breaking Bad was on AMC, like a marathon deal, and at one point when he needs money to get out of Dodge because he thinks it's all falling apart, Bryan Cranston is underneath the...
Cranston.
Okay, whatever his name
Cranston?
Is. I thought it was Cranston. Is it?
It is.
Yeah. Oh.
You just struggled with it.
Oh, okay. he's underneath the house.
Yeah.
And he starts crying because the money is gone because the wife has taken the money and given it to pay, like, the IRS or something like that. And he starts crying, and then he goes into, like, crazy hysterical laughing like the Joker.
That's where you are?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a that's a quite a mix of emotions, Mike.
Thanks.
You've been handling it well. Nice job.
I think so. Yeah. I'm going to go home and cry tonight.
All right. Yeah, Facebook Live that.
Okay.
Bam. You've been Facebook Lived. That was one of my favorite moments from years back.
That was.
Bam. With Mike B. Maybe we can.
Facebook lasted Live. For like a year and a half.
Yeah. Reminisce on that a little bit later on. Here's Jeff with his unnamed segment.
Okay. So I was just playing around looking at it's kind of what I do in my life.
You've been on the phone with Amanda.
Well, yeah. You want to start there? Listen, I got some cowboy content for you in a second. But if you order Valentine's Day stuff to be delivered to an office, and they're like, yes, Valentine's Day, we'll deliver it on Valentine's Day, should there be a deadline to what time it gets there?
Yeah.
What time?
3.
Yeah, I think...
deadline is 3. You're hoping it's there around lunchtime.
They get you like a two-hour window at a lot of these spots. Didn't you like select your time or something?
No.
But they had I would say between 9 and 5 then, unfortunately, Jeff. I hope that's the answer you're looking for, but I would think business hours.
That is the answer I'm hoping for. Like, at the very latest, we'll get there at 5, because we can't assume that whatever business address you gave me when you clicked the it's going to a business box that they're going to work until after 5 o'clock. We can't assume that. We got to get them their Thanksgiving or their Valentine's Day stuff. Dude, so a dude calls me. Sounds like he lives here or somewhere near here. Like, hey, how you doing? I was like, well, I'm fine. I answered because it's from a Fort Lauderdale number. He was like, this for you? And I was like, what? That depends. Who is this? And he was like, oh, got Valentine's Day flowers and bear and chocolate. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, went all out, huh?
Yeah. I was like, well, it's not for me, but you are calling the right person. Yes. And he was like, all right. She stood there. And I was like, there as in the address that you're supposed to take it to? And this is at like 4:15.
5:15 Eastern time.
No, it's 3:15 here, give or take. And he's like, she's still there? And I was like, yeah, she's still there. When are you going to be there? Because people are done working at 5 o'clock and go home. And he's like, oh, I'll be there. You know, I got one more. Be there about 5:15, 5:25. And I was like, huh.
Who did you call?
And I was like, that's a real thing? Like, you guys will deliver something after 5 o'clock to a business? That's what you do? And he's like, going fast can.
And I was just, oh, and Monday is a holiday. So most likely if he dropped it off after your Valentine had left for work, she wouldn't receive it till Tuesday, the 18th.
Oh man, they would not be fresh. Monday, 15, 16, 16, 16. And so you would be dumped.
She left work at 5:31. Yep. It arrived at 5:29. So she did get it.
Good.
But there was also false advertising involved because I thought she already has a little teddy bear that's like a whitish color. And so I got one that came with a brownish teddy bear. I was going for racial equality with her teddy bears at the house. What'd they give her? Another white teddy bear. Ooh. Double effed me. Late, wrong color bear.
I would say a complaint's in order.
I'm a one-star.
And go to Pro Flowers next time.
I so will.
What's wrong with you?
I so will. Bad news for the Cowboys offseason. I was looking around, fumble farting, thinking about my draft stuff, and we've kicked around this general idea a bunch of times about how, man, I really think it shapes up to be a trade-up or a trade-down year, and so I broke this thing down into, let's say, the top 16 players in this NFL draft, because that's how many teams pick before the Cowboys. How many players in each position might be in that top 16?
Three quarterbacks.
And I thought of this at least, and four might go before the Cowboys pick. But Dane did a thing where he wrote up on the offensive tackle group for this year. And the theme of what I'm going to go through here is it is an awesome offensive tackle group. Awesome. And it is an awesome wide receiver group. And what are the two things that the Cowboys might not take? Offensive tackle and wide receiver.
You want your needs to match up with the draft as best as possible. It does not sound like a good match.
Who's thrown out a theory of, like, you could need an offensive tackle?
And who's thrown out a theory of you could need a wide receiver? There's ways we could make this draft work for us either way.
Man.
But so Dane wrote up the offensive tackles. He wrote up his top 10. And then I saw somebody ask him a follow-up. They're like, hey, could you compare this class to last year, where to most people the best offensive tackle was Andre Dillard? And he got picked by the Eagles at like 21 or 22. And he said, I think Andre Dillard would be tied for fifth this year. So the best tackle from a year ago would be fifth or sixth this year. So that's how deep and how strong it is for all these teams that
good
need offensive
job,
line
Eagles.
Help. Great. If you need offensive line help, you're going to have a lot of help in the top half or maybe in the entire first round. But if you're a team like the Cowboys who's looking at a corner or a safety as far as everybody's mock drafts are concerned, there's not one in the top 16 or 17 players that plays safety or corner. And maybe that's good because you get your pick of the litter. You say, hey, I'm going to pick the – well, I take it back. There is one corner, but he's not – going to be somebody that you have a chance to pick. So it's like, man, everything that they may not be interested in at all, it's the best class ever for wide receiver and for offensive tackle. And for what the Cowboys need, it's like, well, you want a defensive end? There's one good one. He'll be gone in the top two. You want a corner? There's one great prospect, and he'll be gone in the top five. You want a defensive tackle? There's two really good prospects. One might have a bum knee, and you probably don't get to pick either one of them. I hate picking at 17. I wish they picked at 12 or 13. That's all I'm saying.
I also wanted them to tank at the end of the year.
I did too. Well, no, I wanted to win the division. But
well, after they lost to Philadelphia, I thought they should have started, which would have been really weird if Philadelphia would have lost the game to the New York Giants. But it would have been interesting if you would have tanked on that last game. What would that have got you to? 14? Would you have been happier at 14?
Yes. Yes, I'd have been happier at 14. Okay. Now, in other news, after our massive story yesterday about reclining on an airline seat, the Delta CEO has weighed in on this situation. And you tell me if you think this is reckless for him to offer this opinion.
Yeah, it's a horrible opinion.
He says passengers should ask permission before reclining their seats on planes.
This putting the responsibility on the passenger, on the customer.
Yeah.
It's your crappy airplane design.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're overcharging and then putting us in spots with horrible customer service and some people that can't mitigate these kinds of disputes. You're just begging for arguments at 30,000 feet.
The only way I could see this working is I would hit my call the flight attendant button and I'd be like, I need the PA system. Because if we're going to do this, we're going to tell the entire plane why we're doing this. Like, excuse me. Hey, I know that the airlines, all they care about is squeezing every penny out of us, and they don't care how comfortable we are at all, and that this is miserable for every single person flying for every minute that we're on here. I was wondering, would it be cool with you, because I'm incredibly uncomfortable, to also make you even more uncomfortable and kind of maybe even get in your personal space a little bit, because I'd like to recline. What do you think? Like, that's the way we'll do this. It's not going to be between me and that passenger because they're going to tell me no. They're going to be like, no, I would rather you didn't. And I am not built that way. So if somebody asked me, I'd say, yeah, no problem. Even though inside I'm thinking, don't do that, jerk. So Delta CEO, hush your mouth. Just let build bigger planes. Build bigger planes. Build planes that are made for full-grown adults instead of children. That's what I say.
Or you could disengage the recline. Or I think what we should do, we need some sort of an official poll or some sort of science to be done and find out if the people that are super annoyed, are we in the majority? Because let's just do what's best for everybody involved, right? Can we get a 51% on this? Would you agree to never recline if you also got the guarantee nobody in front of you reclined? If 51% of passengers vote that, boom, button dismantled. If 51 say it's fine, we leave the buttons alone and never complain about it again. How about that?
Okay, but if that 51% passes, I do need a little sign posted on every seat that, like, hey, what you guys know, the majority that won is it's okay to recline, so please don't judge the person in front of you that reclines. Because if that sign's there, I'd be willing to recline.
Yeah.
Because otherwise what would happen is that would pass, everyone in front of me would recline, and I still wouldn't because I'd be like, well, I don't want to mess with the person.
We're tormented. We're tormented as people that are bothered by it.
And because we're cowards and not willing to ask permission or recline to inconvenience someone else. If we just cared a little bit less.
We're terrible people. Just want to talk to nobody and have everybody read our minds about what's convenient.
Perhaps the final story in the 540 unnamed segment that is all about sports all the time. I have some dinosaur news for you. And this would be the last one with Mike present, of course.
Okay.
The segment
you usually trash dinosaurs. Is this a trashing dinosaur topic?
Not really. So this is, did you guys know that Alberta is basically a tyrannosaur graveyard?
Really?
Tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of dinosaurs were kicking it in Alberta back in the day.
Must have been cold.
They have announced the discovery of Canada's oldest known tyrannosaur. They found a new version. The this one, of course, is called – Mike, you want to hit this pronunciation for me?
Oh, yeah. No problem.
Let me get you this here. That word and then that word.
Thanatotheristus.
Thanos. They're naming dinosaurs after
Thanos.
And
which other one?
You know, he had to be awesome.
Degrutorum.
Okay, thank you. Also known as the Reaper of Death.
Ooh, I like this.
I thought they moved so slow, though.
Like a fast T-Rex?
That's the thing. The Tyrannosaurus necks, as everyone, as we know it, that is displayed in the movies, obviously, if you're a big-time listener of G-Bag Nation, it's been disproven. That dinosaur was a coward, a P-word, moved like an elderly person with a walker, and
he was more of a scavenger.
And chirped like a bird.
It probably let the raptors do some work and then just slowly came by and said, I'm way bigger than you. If you hang around, I'll win the fight.
Yeah.
So you probably want to scatter now because I'm going to take the remains of this thing that you killed.
Yeah, big dog's here to eat.
So their ancestors, before they got fat, slow, cowardly, and started tweeting like birds,
what?
They did have the razor-sharp teeth, 2-ton frame. We're talking about 4,000 pounds of dinosaur here. They terrorized that region of Alberta, which is tough for the Canadian people, but this is about 79.5 million years ago. They're smaller than the T-Rex, but still 30 feet long, 8 feet tall. It was at least 2.5 million years older than its closest relatives, which they say may provide insight into when tyrannosaurs grew from small carnivores into the apex predators that died 66 million years ago. I got a problem with this article calling them apex predators. After all we've learned about Tyrannosaurus rex in the last couple of years here on this show.
It's irresponsible journalism to call them apex predators at this point, Jeff.
From the sources that we use and all of the scientific information we have received from our sources to still call the T-Rex an apex predator, that's foolish. But we do now know that they had an older ancestor that was a little bit smaller and probably more of a badass. And I'm not sure why they evolved into a fat, slow coward that was probably an herbivore.
Sounds like those scientists have been spending too much time in STEM lab and need to get some screen time. You know what I'm saying? Google something up. Read about T-Rex.
I'm telling
you. Learn about it.
I am now at the forefront of the dinosaur discussion and will into the future. That's my promise to you, the Tolo.
Man, well, you're doing a great job there.
Good job.
Also, Mike, shut up.
All right.
We're coming back here live from Premier Grilling in Frisco, El Dorado and the Toll, where the Kamado Joe Mega Sale rolls on deep into Valentine's evening. If you're on your way to dinner or something romantic, just file it away in the back of your head. You're going to want to get into Premier Grilling sometime real soon. Pick up one of these Kamado Joes and all the greatest rubs and accessories you could need to make your barbecue excellent. We'll talk about what's on 105.3thefan.com next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.